Benvenuti ad Alma Lectio, il podcast dell'Università di Bologna dedicato alle Lectio Magistralis tenute da scienziati, intellettuali e personaggi illustri che nel corso degli anni sono stati invitati dall'Università di Bologna a condividere il loro sapere e contribuire alla divulgazione della conoscenza. Nella puntata di oggi ascoltiamo Marjane Satrapi, artista e intellettuale iraniana, da sempre al fianco delle cittadine e dei cittadini iraniani che rivendicano diritti indiscutibili, che ha pronunciato la sua lezione dottorale il 2 febbraio 2023 in occasione della cerimonia di inaugurazione dell'anno accademico 2022-2023 dell'Università di Bologna. Buon ascolto!
Hello, good afternoon, buonasera. So I will speak in English, and they told me that you speak English. So I'm extremely honored, extremely happy, extremely impressed to be today here in Bologna. I feel too short, actually. Everybody else much taller than me, so I will stand. It's very peculiar for me to have this prize in this university, because when they wrote to me, they said that the Pope Francis was where I'm staying now. And, you know, in any dimension of the world, if the Pope and me, we are in the same category, it's something going on, which is not completely normal. But anyway, I'm very, very happy to be here. So, as you all know, since more than four months is a revolution, actually, that is happening in Iran. And when I wrote Persepolis about 23 years ago, exactly 23 years ago it was published, I wrote it 24 years ago, people, they were extremely convinced about what Iran was. They had an image of, you know, these very crazy people, you know, all against the West. Everybody, you know, wanted to kill all the Americans, all the Westerners, etc., because, you know, everybody saw the film Never Without My Daughter, isn't it? And so they, all of that was believed. And this is a speciality of the human being, that the less knowledge they have, the more convinced they are. So the less they know, the more they're sure about this little thing that they know, because obviously the more you know it is complicated. So, you know, I kept on going saying, yeah, but it's not like this and it's not like that, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason that I wrote the book, it was not so much that I did not like to talk, but I did not like to repeat myself for 1,000 times. So I actually wrote the book for once, not to be interrupted, not to have to tell the same story 1,000 times. And at the time, and even after this time, still, you know, people, they thought that I was a very exceptional person, you know, coming from this leftist family from the big city of Tehran. So I was not a representative of Iranian people, because obviously, you know, I would come, you know, I was not like what is like the base of the Iranian people. And I just was saying, believe me, Iranian women, they are much, they're like me and like 10 times more, and nobody would believe me. But so today everybody is talking again about this story that's unfortunately, very sadly, is the same story that happened 23 years ago, but with big differences. And I'm here tonight to talk about these differences and to talk about a little bit the history, because all of that does not make any sense if we don't put it in a historical perspective. First of all, you should all know that there is no one single country in the world. You take the whole world, the country that has made the most revolution during the 20th and the 21st century is Iran. No country has made as many revolutions that has been made in Iran. It starts in 1906 with the revolution for the constitutional monarchy, the first one in the whole Asian continent, 1999, 1919, 1953, we were the first country again in the Asian continent to nationalize our oil. Then you have 1979, 1980, and you go on, all the mass murdering between the 1980 and 1988 when they killed about 20,000 young people that are exactly the same age of the people that are dying today. And the whole world was silent about it, believing that actually we Iranian people, we deserve the government that we have. This is the fantasy of the democracy, because you have the right to choose. But I will tell you something, even in a democracy, people, they don't deserve always the people that rule them. Do Italians deserve Berlusconi? Do you deserve Salvini? No, you don't. And yet you are a democracy, and yet you can choose. If Iranian people, they choose their government, it will not be called dictatorship. You have to kill people, put them in jail, stop them from talking. If the majority of the people, they don't agree with you, or if 80% of the Iranian people are with you, then it's called a very, solid democracy where we all agree to be stupid all at the same time. But this is not so. What has changed now that I am very happy today to be here and talk about that, now given the fact that Iran and they made all this revolution and in the most pacific way for more than a century, they're asking, please, we want to be free, we want to, we want to own our own country, we are a wealthy country, we want not to be more than 60% of us should not be poor, etc., etc. What has changed now? And I will explain it to you now. The enemy of democracy, first of all, democracy is a culture. Is not something, it has been this fantasy. America with George Bush had this fantasy that we are going to bomb countries and then put two Coca-Cola machine in them and then poof, you have a democracy. That doesn't happen this way. It's a procedure. It certainly does not happen with wars and bombs, and especially not by killing people. A population has to advance. So, when in 1979 we made the revolution in Iran, only 40% of Iranian people could read and write. We had 60% of illiterate person in Iran. So today it's above 80% of the people can read and write. That is one of the incredible things that actually that the Mullah did, is that they created school and university everywhere in the country. I was in one of their schools, believing that, we were studying in these schools and we will become this fanatic little Muslim, down with this and bound down with that, and we kill this one and we kill that one. But, once you know how to read, then you don't read only the things that they give you to read. You read whatever you want to read. Then you have access to forbidden book. Then you have access to Hegel. Then you have access to whatever you want. So then you start reading. So already, and so therefore, this thing that it takes about more than centuries, the separation between the religion and state, because the mixture of the two is explosive. It has never worked anywhere. It will never work anywhere. Religion should be something extremely personal and has nothing to do with the government. This, more or less, they managed to make this separation within 44 years. In France, it took about three centuries. So just already for that, we can give them a prize, thank you. They made a way fast word to understand to people that, you cannot rule the country with the thing that God said. Who has seen God and why God talks to you, especially to you, more than he would talk to me, for example? Why am I less chosen than you? This is another thing. So, the biggest enemy of this democratic culture is actually the patriarchal culture. Why is that? Because it's the same schema. So, as in the family, the father is the chief of the family and has the last word. The dictator is the father of the nation. So he also has the last word. And I'm not saying that in a way that, oh, we the women, they're so much better than men, etc. I hate that, because if it was the other way around, that means that was a matriarchal culture, I would be on the side of the men. You always have to be on the side of the oppressed one. And I don't like, you know, when people, they... And I don't like when people, they say, oh, you know, women, you know, they are so much better than men, etc. It's actually, I think, women and men, the real meaning of feminism, that means that we women and men, we are equal in everything, even in our bad side, even in our nasty side. If we say that a woman is incapable of lying, if we say that a woman is incapable of violence, if we say a woman is incapable of manipulation, this person is not a human being anymore. It's a little kitty. A human being is manipulative. A human being is violent. A human being lies. That is actually one of the speciality that the human being has. No other animal lies. That is actually what distinguishes us from the animals, is our capacity of, you know, just creating a parallel reality. So is it a war of women and men? It happens that in the society of today, since the beginning of the history, not really the beginning of the history, because we have had some matriarchal societies, is a patriarchal culture. So this is that you have to fight. Okay, so what happened in Iran is that the moment that the Islamic Republic installed themselves, I was 10 and 9, and then we had to put the veil. And the reason of that was that if the men, they saw our hair, they would get sexually excited and would get an erection, which means that, like, for example, now I'm talking, I think more or half of this room is men. Everybody has a little erection or the beginning of an erection, and nobody said, maybe we should ask these men not to have an erection or give them a little bag of ice that they put, you know, down there each time they see our hair. And, you know, with the Pavlov and the dog, you know, after 20 times, you know, it doesn't have any effect. But no, but so that was this whole thing. And then we having half of the right of the men. I mean, in the institutional way, you know, like a very intelligent woman, her testimony would count half of the head with the IQ of 150, for example, a professor in quantum physics, her testimony would count half of a man with an IQ of 69, just because she's a woman. And, you know, it is a complete apartheid. And unfortunately, in the West today, when we talk about this revolution, the same apartheid that the Islamic Republic created between men and women, the Westerners, they continue saying that, calling that just a woman revolution. This is continuing the apartheid, but only we are on the right side. It's true that the revolution started with the women, but our boys came after us. They were behind us. And this is the beauty of it. This is the first feminist revolution that is carried by the man. Don't forget that the four people that they have been executed in Iran, they are four men. That among the people that are in the prison, there are lots of boys. And each time I got arrested in Iran, that was by the women. I mean, 80% of the time, that was women that beat me up, that stopped me, that slapped me, and they called me whores. So, you know, it's not a war between the men and women. So you have in front of you a new generation, actually, that has grown up with internet, and they don't have the trauma as we had. I had the trauma of the revolution. I had the trauma of the war. I had the trauma of the exile. Each of us, generation after generation, we had the trauma of something traumatic happening in our country. And this Generation Z, the one born, you know, like after the year 2000, not only they just were born with them, so, you know, they were not impressed by them, but also it was this incredible thing that is called internet, that I was the first one to criticize. I was against any kind of social media, you know, like, oh, this is, and, you know, it's not good. And, you know, these young people, they don't know what you're doing, etc. But actually, the social media gave them the permission to grow up with the world and the youth of the world, being actually in contact with people that they had the same taste as them. They like the same music. They would, you know, an Iranian boy who could like actually K-pop and have a relationship with some kids in Korea and et cetera, et cetera. And it goes. So this is that. So Mahsa Amini gets killed in this country 4.5 months ago because she has not put her veil the way she had to put, and therefore the men, they would be tempted. So therefore she deserved to die. And that was really the beginning of the end. And that is why I do believe in this revolution, because of that, because that was the last drop. Because just right after that, our boys came in the street. When in 1979 in Iran, the 1980, they decided that the veil was obligatory, that we had to cover our head. My mother went to demonstrate. I was 10 and I went with my mother and demonstrated. My dad was also there, but that was not so many men. There were few, there were just few of them. Worse than that, even the leftist opposition, they didn't support the women. They said this is the fight of the social classes. It has nothing to do, you know, it's not a problem. They forgot actually that the women rights and the human rights are the same. When you oblige half of the society, actually you don't consider them. You consider them as second-hand citizens. You give them half of the right. What about, you know, the sexual minority? What about the religious minority? What about, you know, different tribes that we have, different languages that we have? I have in front of me a generation that is extremely instructed, not sexist for one bit, and I say that because I really gave myself the possibility to be in contact with many of them all over Iran. And another thing also is that they come from all the social classes and they come from all over Iran. And this is why we have to believe in this revolution and we have to support it. We had something called the Green Movement in 2009, believing that the system, the Islamic Republic, could be modified and reformed. I never believed in that because a dictatorship that opens to reform stops being a dictatorship. Oh, I'm a dictator, let's change. Well, then he's not a dictator anymore. Dictatorship and reform does not go together. But again, I come back to George Bush, who to me is a war criminal. I mean, Donald Trump was such an asshole that, you know, now George Bush, everybody thinks, oh, he was so sweet and he looks so nice. I mean, all this Daesh and ISIS and whatever is the result of what he did. I mean, he Rumsfeld, all of that, they were war criminals. So what I want to say is the chaos in which they put this whole region, George Bush, you know, in Afghanistan and then in Iraq and then it was in Syria and all of that, Iranian, they were like, oh, we don't want this change because it might be chaos. Now we have gone above that, you know, they don't want this Islamic Republic because they want democracy. They don't want the Islamic Republic because they want a separation between the religion and the state. And if we talk about just numbers and facts, about 30% of the Iranians, they call themselves atheists, that is much above anywhere in Europe. About more than 82%, they want the Islamic Republic to disappear. 6% of them, they don't have any opinion. So it's a small fringe, about 10, 12% that remains. And all of them, they are not convinced. I mean, piece of that is the oligarchies, the people that even don't believe in this regime, but they make huge amount of money with them, the one that we called the Aghazadeh. So, and also we should not forget, because they gave us half of the right of the men, because, you know, we grow up telling us, oh, you're worse half of the men. What happened in Iran? Well, 60% of Iranian students are girls. 70% of Iranian engineers, 70, 70, are women. My father is an engineer. More than 60% of the people that work with him, they're female engineers. And he said, you know, I don't do that for feministic reason, is that they're better and they don't want to, you know, if they don't make it well, they don't want to hear, oh, you didn't do it well because you were a woman. So they never make any mistake. So I think that the fact is a mathematical relationship between working half and trying twice harder and studying two times harder, I think is a direct result. And this woman that we're talking, I mean, if you take after the revolution, the most successful Iranian people outside of Iran, they were women. I mean, Nobel Prize is a woman, a field medal in mathematics is a woman. The New York Times published, you know, an article about the best 10 bankers in America, three of them Iranian women, first astronaut Iranian woman, NASA engineer Iranian woman, the person who sold most book outside of Iran is me. Sorry, it's true. I sent myself a flower. Iranian woman. So we are talking about this women. So what I want to say is that yes, this is a woman life freedom, zan zendegi azadi, but is also a mard mihan abadi, is also a man country and prosperity. Buongiorno Gianluca, I just saw you, sorry, I just saw my old friend. And Elettra, hello. So, so we need to support them in any way possible, and it is possible. You know, I mean, I was walking in Bologna, and so everybody wants to cut their hair, you know, to show solidarity. You know, don't cut your hair, you know, just cut the ties with the guardian of the revolution. You know, cutting the hair, that's okay, it's fine. Well, you have our support. And then, you know, and believe me, the politician, the whole politics is about the public opinion. You know, if the public opinion is for a cause, the politician, what do they want? They just want to be reelected. They want the power. So the public opinion counts a lot. So if each of you talk, if each of us we participate in the public opinion, then the politics, they have to take action. So this is the power, the soft power of being a human being. And now, ultimately, I'm not going to, because they told me that I should not talk very much, so, but I cannot stop myself, as you can see. But the subject of my talk was the freedom of mind. And I just want to come to that because I see lots of students that are here, you know, I think the things that I said about Iran and my belief and all of that, more or less all of you know it, maybe it's just put, you know, in a more of a condensed way. But I think as human being, Westerner, Easterner, you know, whatever we believe in it, is something that I call the freedom of mind. And that means that no matter what your belief and your conviction is, you can say that you are a free person from the moment you can go above your own conviction. Meaning, me, Marjan, I'm against the veil, 100%, I hate it. I hate to cover my head. I know what it means. It means I'm a sexual object. I should not, you know, oh, the original sin. That is not actually particular to Islam. I mean, all the religion, the particular, excuse me, senora, but in all the religion, in all the religion, the original sin is the woman. And nobody say, maybe Eve, she was just a very curious person wanting to know the taste of the apple. That only shows that she's curious and intelligent. And nobody say, okay, Eve, bad person. Why Adam was so stupid to follow her? Why Adam didn't say, Eve, come on, we have to follow God. So why is that the fault of Eve? It's not the fault of Adam. You know, he could just not eat it, but this is it. But coming back to what I wanted to say, so the original sin, me, I hate that. But I think that is an instance that is above me that is called the human rights. And that goes beyond of what I believe, which says that everybody has the right to have the religion they want, to get dressed accordingly, to behave accordingly, until they don't go and force it in people's face. Everybody has the right to be able to do it. So in France, when they banned the veil, and you know, they were like, oh, you hate the veil, you are with us. And I was like, yes, I am against the veil, but I'm against banning everything. You know, we all think that our freedom stops the moment that the freedom of somebody else starts. Then it's very easy. It becomes like your neighbor. Oh, you make the sound. Oh, my freedom is here. Now you cannot do this. We are either all of us free together, or we are not free together. But our freedom starts all at the same place, and the freedom of one cannot stop the freedom of the other one. It has to be the tolerance. But why is it that human being is so much scared of freedom? Because the ultimate price to pay for freedom is loneliness. You know, if you really want to behave and do and say and exactly what you want the moment that you want, then you become a very lonely person, which is my case. I have very few friends. So, but at the same time, as I'm saying that, it should not be this idea, because I also, you know, I have lived in Europe more than, I don't know, let's make the maths, about 34 years I have lived in Europe. So like all my adolescence, I was in Europe, you know, all my adult life, I have been in Europe. And I see, you know, like these people that, you know, sometimes they have good heart and they're like, yeah, but you know, this is their culture, we have to respect it, et cetera, et cetera. Believe me, there is no culture in which a woman like her clitoris to be cut. Not, that does not exist. It's not a cultural fact. There is no human being who is born and say, oh, I love to be a slave. That doesn't exist neither. You know, human beings, they like to be free. So the human rights is not a Westerner thing. It's a standard for all the humans to live properly, decently, and it has to be respected. And so, to all of you young people, I told you that if you are very free, you will become lonely, and you know, and that is not very good. But really think with yourself. Think what you think. You know, the majority of the people, they are not right. I mean, given the number of stupid people that are in the street, you can imagine that the opinion of the majority of the people is either extremely mediocre or stupid, or the mixture of both of them. So forget about the opinion of the majority. The minority sometimes can be right. The majority is always wrong. This is factual. So you have to have your own ethic of life. You have to have your own, you have to find the question to your, to the answer to your question yourself. You know, morality is something, again, excuse me, but the morality for me is something that is very relative. It changes. You know, 100 years ago, a woman who would be, you know, a virgin would be the good woman to marry, etc. You know, that is very, you know, you would, that was really a plus. Today, if you're 35 years old and you're a virgin, you have a psychological problem. Nobody wants you. So, you know, like, Yes, lying is very bad, but you know, if you lie because you know you want to save the life of your comrade, you know, not to go to prison, then lying is very good. You know, I mean, stealing is bad, but if you are, I don't know, Jean, if in the Miserables of Victor Hugo, then you steal the bread, you know, to give it to Fantine and her kid, then the stealing is very good. It depends. It is extremely relative. But ethic is something that is not relative. So ethic is something that has to do between is the relationship between you and yourself, and you know what is right, and everybody has to know what is right for them. And believe me, if you are in a room of 1,000 as we are today, and even if 999 of us think that you are wrong, and still you think you are right, believe me, you are right. And that was it. Thank you very much.
Avete ascoltato la lezione dottorale che Marjan Satrapi, artista e intellettuale iraniana, da sempre a fianco delle cittadine e dei cittadini iraniani che rivendicano diritti indiscutibili, ha pronunciato il 2 febbraio 2023 in occasione della cerimonia di inaugurazione dell'anno accademico 2022-2023 dell'Università di Bologna. Vi aspettiamo alla prossima Alma Lectio.